Welcome to Standing Room Only, featuring lectures, town hall meetings, and other public forums recorded on location by WFHB community volunteers. This program amplifies voices not adequately represented in mainstream media to help raise public consciousness of issues affecting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Tonight on Standing Room Only, the Bloomington Solidarity Network on Tech Park. On Saturday, January 7th, the Bloomington Solidarity Network hosted a public discussion at the Monroe County Public Library to talk about Bloomington's planned technology park. The organization argues that building the park will increase cost of housing in that area. The main speaker at the event was Adam Scouten from the Bloomington Solidarity Network, and multiple community members asked questions as well. We begin today's episode with Adam Scouten introducing the talk.
Okay, I think we're going to go ahead and get started. Just want to give you an overview of what we're planning on doing here today. Obviously, this is about the Tech Park. We want to do sort of an intro of what Tech Park is, you know, what kind of project it is, we think it's going to affect our community. We're also going to talk about the Solidarity Network. But hopefully, once we get through talking about the Tech Park itself, answering questions and stuff like that, we can have a discussion on how we can move forward. And hopefully that takes up the majority of this event. So first off, my name's Adam. I'm with the Bloomington Solidarity Network. So basically, we're an organization that you could call a mutual aid organization. And what that means is that we are entirely volunteer-run and organized, and we work together to defend people who are tenants or people who are workers against abuses by landlords and by employers, whatever form that comes in. And we employ sort of methods of what you'd call direct action. It means we're not a charity. We aren't sort of legal advisors. We try to organize people for mass action. And that's sort of central to our philosophy. Most of what we do is centered around rent struggles. We want to do things with employers as well, or with employees against their employers. But I think a lot of you probably know that there is a big problem with housing, especially affordable housing, in this city. So we didn't even intentionally do outreach to try to focus on housing problems. Those problems presented themselves as soon as we started doing outreach. And this type of trend that's happening in Bloomington, has been happening for a long time now, is the progressive loss of real affordable housing by any sort of meaningful sense of that term. And we think it's important to talk about why that's happening. Now, I've lived in Bloomington about only 7 years now, and even in the time that I've been here, I have seen the massive transformation that is taking place. And I think everybody probably knows what I'm talking about. It's the giant apartment buildings constantly being built all up and down Walnut and College and everywhere else. And Bloomington, at this point, is now the most expensive city to rent an apartment in Indiana. But this isn't localized to Bloomington. That's an important part of what we need to be talking about, because we need to understand this more, not so much as an anomaly or something that's purely particular to Bloomington. This is a national economic trend. And that's going to be really important for when we discuss a tech park, because the type of project that Tech Park represents is also not unique. And it also has a lot to do with housing affordability. So like I said, Bloomington is pretty much the most expensive city in Bloomington to rent in. And also, as most everyone in here probably knows, there's a huge problem with people who are experiencing homelessness. And one of the arguments that we're also going to make is that these things are, in fact, directly related and are expressions of the same economic trend. So we want to talk about a process that is called gentrification, basically. And gentrification is not just an economic, it's also a political trend targeted to restructure urban areas to favor the wealthy, to expel the poor, to eliminate affordable housing and push it further and further away from downtown areas, further and further from the resources of downtown. Now, there are a few places in the U.S. that are essentially analogous to what we're witnessing in Bloomington. Especially, you could see it on the West Coast. You could see it in Seattle. You could see it in Portland. You see it in San Francisco, the whole Silicon Valley area. And what these places really have in common is the expansion of tech industry in these cities, right? The tech industry represents sort of what, you know, is the hope of big money in the U.S. to sort of keep the economic motor running. So gentrification is sort of part and parcel to that whole process itself. There's a story that recently came out about Silicon Valley, where nearly a third of all youth in Silicon Valley are homeless, at the same exact time that tech profits are soaring. And we don't view that as sort of an accidental relationship. They're part of one and the same thing. So when we look to these cities on the West Coast and this process, I think we can get a pretty good glimpse of what we're all already seeing sort of in a smaller manifestation, but is quickly expanding. So, like I said, the Solidarity Network has been working with low-income renters for over a year now. We're still a young organization, but I think most of my fellow Solidarity Network members can attest to the fact that we've learned a whole lot about the struggles faced by low-income renters in Bloomington. We've learned not just the, you know, near impossibility of finding affordable housing close to downtown, but affordable housing that is even habitable, right? Affordable housing where the landlord actually does repairs or actually cleans up insect problems. Bed bugs is a big thing that we've had to deal with. And there's all sorts of tactics that landlords use to squeeze more and more money out of tenants who have to struggle just to pay the rent. If you have bed bugs in this town, if you move into an apartment, it's near impossible to get a landlord to admit that it's not your fault. The landlord will try to blame you and will try to make you pay. And we've talked to many people who lived in cities all over the country, and many who have said that this is the only city in which it's pretty much a given that you're going to lose your security deposit. There are several landlords in this town that make their money just by confiscating, not just that way, but they really supplement their income by taking people's security deposits. There are many of you who might even have leases where it's written into the lease that you don't even get to keep the whole security deposit. So these types of things are rampant, and those are the types of things we face all the time. But sort of the other side of a coin is that a lot of places which have predatory landlords like this are the only places that people can still afford to pay. So we've been involved in fighting these sort of day-to-day struggles with people who live in affordable housing, who have predatory landlords. But in the long run, we've realized if we're not preserving the ability of people to even access affordable housing at all in the long run, what we're ultimately fighting is a losing battle. And at this point, it's pretty clear to us that if we don't do something now, eventually the entire city will be transformed to a point where it will be near impossible for working people, low-income renters, to live anywhere near downtown, and mostly will be pushed to the other side of State Road 37. So that's what got us interested in the tech park. We've done a lot of research on this over the last year or so, and I want to make clear that we didn't start off being economic experts or anything like that. None of us are business people, we're not tech industry people or anything like that. what our experience comes from is sort of an understanding of these economic relations between the wealthy and the powerful and the poor, and realizing that not everything that politicians or corporations say is necessarily the truth. So that's where we started, right, with that assumption, right? And with what we learned by struggling with people here in Bloomington on the ground, right? We saw it in the courtrooms, we saw it in the landlord's offices, we saw it in the way that the police and judges and everybody else is set up to make it impossible, near impossible, for low-income renters to just get by. Even in this town, people who live in Section 8 housing will have their rents go up yearly. They find loopholes. And they're only going to be forced to do this stuff more often the more the market becomes saturated with renters and the more bigger corporations are invested in developing here. So like we said, it is the long run that we felt like we had to take into account. Otherwise, we're just putting a Band-Aid on this problem, right? So that's why we got interested in the tech park, because this is, let me just go into exactly what it is. I won't assume anything. How many people have heard of the Tech Park plan? Okay, so most people here. Okay, that's good. So it's been in the works for many, many years now. It's just only sort of now beginning to roll forward, right? So basically what it is there's a big plot of land near City Hall, directly adjacent to City Hall, basically between 11th and 10th Street, and between Morton and Rogers, and a plot of land a little west of that, that is where Bender Lumber is currently. So the main section of that land was purchased by the city of Bloomington a few years ago from the university for, I think, $9.2 or $9.3 million. That land is certified by the state to be used as what's called a tech park. A tech park is a species of a special tax zone, basically. Okay, so when you get this land certified as the special tax zone, it's called a TIF district. It's a form of tax incentive where the municipality, in this case the city of Bloomington, can keep tax revenue that would otherwise go to a general fund or go to the state. Now, the stipulation is it has to be used for specific purposes. Now, in this case, it's used to fund and develop tech industry. So the vision of what will happen there is that there will be new buildings which will effectively serve as office or workspace and some residential space precisely for tech industries. Now, that's it in general. It allows the city to keep a large amount of tax revenue, but only for that purpose, okay, for that district. Right? Now, there's three big things that we want to focus on when we're talking about the tech park, because these are the three major themes that always come up that we've heard from the city and from the corporations that are really interested in this tech park, and that's jobs, taxes, housing. So we've already sort of talked about housing a little bit, but I'll go back to that after we sort of explain this this tax thing a little bit more. Okay, so like I said, it's a TIF district. What that means is tax incremental financing, and it sounds a little more complicated than it actually is. But basically, what happens in a TIF district, okay, this property, in this case, it's mostly just sort of empty land right now. It has a certain valuation on which property taxes are determined, right? Now, when this region gets set up as a TIF district, okay, that valuation is essentially frozen for the amount of property taxes that would be paid on it. Now, as the land is developed, in this case for tech industry, the value of that land will go up. Now, for anybody else, that means you pay more property taxes, right? Well, all the extra revenue, right, that would come from the increased valuation of that land gets captured into a special account. And that money is then, can legally only then be used in that specific region once again, right? So imagine if every dollar of taxes you paid to the state or the federal government, whatever, went directly back into your own home or back into your own pocket, right? That's what it would be like, only individuals don't have that privilege. So these TIF districts are all over the country. Something like 30% of Chicago is a TIF district now, right? They are engines of gentrification. They're not designed to make life easier or more affordable or anything like that for residents who are struggling, right? It's a tax incentive for corporations, okay? So that brings us a little bit into the jobs argument, right? The other, so, you know, you could say, well, maybe this tax stuff, okay, it doesn't sound that great, but maybe there's some extra jobs to be had here. So, yeah, maybe you're... Actually, let me mention something else about taxes before I move on. Even though the tax is paid on the valuation of that land stays in an account for that land, the property values of all the surrounding area will go up as well, okay? Now, people who live there will have to pay the extra taxes, and it won't go in an account that's just for them, right? So what that means is people who own their homes, higher property values, higher property taxes, and for renters, it means higher rents. Okay. Now, the nearer west side of Bloomington, especially the Maple Heights area, there are people there who, especially some senior citizens who own homes that they, you know, they inherited from people who used to work when there was manufacturing in town, stuff like that. So they own that home, but they don't have a lot of extra revenue, right? There's also some low-income apartments in that area, some of the few units that are left close to downtown, right? So that's what we're talking about. And there's a similar case all along 11th Street, right? There's Section 8 housing in that area. There's relatively affordable housing. And then sort of at what point you reach Crestmont, which is the last sort of government housing that's available. Now, the way we see it, all the affordable housing in the near west side, especially all along 11th Street, is vulnerable in the long run. It happens all the time. Okay, Section 8 housing was torn down, or a public housing was torn down in West Lafayette. You know, these things can happen. If affordable housing gets in the way of the profit of these tech corporations, the profit of the tech corporations will win out. So, back to the jobs point. So we've been told, you might have seen it in the media, newspaper, or heard it from the city, that, you know, one of the incentives of the tech park is jobs, right? More jobs. Well, we think about this from the perspective of low-income renters or people who are working for minimum wage or something like that, right? These folks are not going to be getting jobs in the tech park, okay? This area is designed for corporations. Now, that is not the line we were fed for the years leading up to this. There's a thing that was a report sort of that was put out by the city called the Master Plan, right? And a master plan for the tech park, okay? And if we sort of go through that master plan, and that we quote it in this report that the Solidarity Network wrote up, which we have, there's a paper out there that shows you where you can get it if there's no more physical copies. In that master plan, we can see sort of this contradictory narrative going on. On the one hand, we're told that the tech park is for startups, right? that if, you know, I start a small company, you know, like I'm Steve Jobs or something, and I made a computer in my garage, all I need is cheap office workspace, and voila, there it is in the tech park, right? So everybody can live their small business dream, right? Well, we wrote in this report in the summer that this summer, that the tech park, the plan, the design for it is more suited for big corporations. That's what we were saying back when the line was still, it's about startups and jobs and this and that, okay? Well, the first plot of land that's been sold in the tech park, not even sold, given away for $1, was given to this company called the Tsuchiya Group. Now, they design sort of technology and stuff like that for the automobile industry. Now, they are the North American division of a multinational corporation called the Tassus Corporation. Not exactly a startup, okay? Now, we've also been told, and this was the announcement of the transfer of this land was made at the Dimension Mill in the Tech Park, very triumphantly by the city and local corporations. There was a sort of promise that 18 new jobs would be added by this corporation. 18. 12 of which would be engineer jobs. So not exactly jobs that you can, you know, get upward mobility through, sort of jobs you have to have lots of education and experience to do. And there's no reason to believe that 18 jobs will come with this corporation. In fact, in the master plan for the tech park, one of the local resources that was cited as an incentive to building the tech park in Bloomington was that we have a plethora of so-called non-employer businesses. What that means is these are businesses which hire a minimum of employees. But we were told jobs would come with the tech park. Now, 18 jobs are promised by the Tsuchiya Group, or claimed that they would add 18 jobs. Oddly enough, the Director of Economic and Sustainable Development claimed that it would bring 50 jobs. And it's unclear where either one of these numbers is coming from or why the disparity between them. So basically what I would argue is that there's a way of looking at this whole project that we are trying to push forward that sort of cuts through some of the distorted presentation of it. Now, the last thing I want to talk about, so I don't go on too long, so once again, the question of housing. One of the other incentives, supposedly, with the tech park, which was included in the master plan, is that it would so-called diversify downtown residency. Effectively, what this means is this was sort of the planners of the tech park speaking to people who may be reading this, who are a little upset by all the development that's going on along College, on Morton, sort of like a creeping army advancing on the west side almost, right? They're saying, look, tech park's here, no more giant student apartment building. But that doesn't mean that there won't be apartment buildings for tech companies, people who work for tech companies. Now, there, one of the first developments that's going on is technically adjacent to the future tech park, is going to be housing, and it was housing that was intended, that we were told would be affordable. Well, when you look at the average price of one of these units, it's nearly $700 of this sort of planned development. Now, by, I don't know about everyone's standard of affordability, but $700 per month is not too affordable in my book. So this is what we could, you know, when we look at these terms that are thrown out there, right, we have to look, dig deeper and see what's actually underneath. When affordable is thrown out, or when numbers about taxes are thrown out, we have to sort of think, like, where are these numbers coming from? What is actually going to happen here beyond sort of hype? So like I said, we were interested in this because we see this as threatening working people and their families, or even extending the problem of people who are experiencing homelessness. You know, I've stated that, you know, the relationship between sort of soaring tech profits on the West Coast and homelessness are part of the same exact process. Now, what that says is there is no way of solving the issue of something like homelessness by not actually treating the real cause, which is this sort of concentration of wealth by large corporations. So there have been ways that the city has been trying to address homelessness, some of them a little more despicable than others. Like, we've all seen the anti-panhandling signs, I assume. But also, you know, building the new Crawford House. Now, that's going to take some people, hopefully, and give them a place to stay, but it's not going to stop what is generating the problem of people not having homes, right? People don't have homes because they can't afford to live in them. And if the cost keeps going up, the problem will get worse. So, like I said, we've focused on this issue because we see it as the long-run trend that we have to fight if we are going to prevent the further sort of marginalization of working people, the working poor, or the homeless.
You've been listening to the Bloomington Solidarity Network on Tech Park, on Standing Room Only, on WFHB. You have been listening to the Bloomington Solidarity Network speak about Bloomington's planned technology park. The talk took place on January 7th at the Monroe County Public Library. The main speaker at the event was Adam Scouten from the Bloomington Solidarity Network, and multiple community members have been asking questions as well.
Begin to have a discussion on, you know, we do want to hear people's views. You know, we want to hear from people, especially who maybe feel like they're going to be affected. Maybe if you live on the Near West Side, something like that. We've done a lot of canvassing all around that area and talked to a lot of people. But we haven't really, until this point, been able to sort of build something that we hope can sort of stop this process. So I guess, I mean, I'd like to open it up to discussion. Yeah.
Do you mind if I come up and talk about sort of my own personal opinions about the, I mean, I just wanted to address the whole group, so
okay.
Step in front here. So yeah, I work for one of these startups that's wanting to build the tech park. I also live at the Bloomington Cooperative Living. So as you know, I don't know if everybody knows, it's affordable housing here in Bloomington. I live at the old Middleway House just downtown, about two blocks away from the Johnson Building. So about a year ago.
On the corner there?
Yeah, on the corner there. It's a great yellow house. I live with about 21 people. Keep rent low. It's community living. We make food every night, we buy bulk food, you know, we do things as a community and try to, you know, foster community development. About a year ago, I got hired for one of these startups. I'm client success coordinator at a company called Periodic, and they are the sole reason why I'm here in Bloomington. I was just about to move to Silicon Valley or a startup, you know, startup communities elsewhere. But I really wanted to stay in Bloomington. I absolutely love Bloomington. I love the community that it fosters. I love organizations like this. I love organizations like the BCL, and I love organizations like the Digital Neighborhood Alliance. So I really just wanted to clear up the sort of the viewpoint on the tech park being solely for large corporations. I saw and heard a lot about sort of, I'm going to use a harsh word here, like sort of vilifying the owners of these sort of companies that want to build the tech park as these large evil corporations. And I can tell you that is not the case. There are frequently my boss goes without pay so that the company can stay afloat. You know, I don't know when the last time one of the other bosses got paid because he's looking for funding right now. And instead of making his employees or firing an employee, he's going without pay.
Isn't that why he's getting a tax break?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know about the specifics of the tech park and how they're getting tax breaks and that sort of thing. But the main reason why they need a tax break is because these organizations don't have enough money to buy the property outright. And so just to list a couple of these startups that that are wanting and pushing to be and build the tech park and have new jobs go in there is Cheddar Getter, Periodic.
Jobs for who?
Jobs for who? Jobs for me. I mean, I almost left. I live in affordable housing because I see the
what kind of degree do you have?
I have a couple of degrees.
Exactly.
Right.
Oh, no. I mean,
people we're talking about that this is going to affect don't. They don't have the opportunities
right.
that you have.
No, I mean, you're completely right, but that...
You're living in extreme privilege. Right.
That goes beyond just, like, affordable housing. That goes into affordable higher education, which I'm completely for. That goes into, you know, a bunch of different other things that I am 100% for. I know that because I lived in an upper middle class family that I have privilege to go to college and be able to get the degrees that I have. Right. And I know that there are people in the world that beyond anything will not be able to get a job higher than $10 an hour.
So why are you up here arguing that we should be...
No, I'm not arguing anything. I'm just presenting my point of view of the companies that are looking to develop the tech park. These companies are not large organizations. I work with 6 people. Cheddar Getter has 5 people. Envisage is the largest company that is here in Bloomington, and they have, what, 75 people. 75 people. So these are not... What?
In what job, if they're all tiny companies?
Because if they're able to gather and create sort of a tech area, then that could foster growth in the sense that they're not spending their rent money at these higher rent or places. They can combine together and be able to share that, share not only the rent prices but also information. You know, instead of me having to go across town to go and talk to, you know, somebody else from another company, they're all in the same building. You know.
And corporate incubators are great. That what you're talking about is basically a business incubator to where everyone can share plans,
yeah.
share ideas. The problem with that is that we're spending so much revenue on all this stuff to secure basically some maintenance jobs. Because folks like yourself, no offense, and I'm glad that you're up here
mm-hmm.
sharing this viewpoint, those jobs aren't going to be available. Pick up a broom, sweep the floor, clean the windows. That's the type of jobs that we're looking at. I'm no offense to... I'm all about a business incubator. You guys had... There was one right down on Hillside, gigantic building. I mm-hmm. think it's the warehouse now. Our point is that we're not okay with money just going directly back into the black hole of spending that a TIF district creates.
Yeah.
And we're not against people having jobs or making money. We're against the city and the rich people that they are cozying up with taking the money.
These
that
people
is,
aren't rich. I'm going to tell you straight up
that
these people
are rich.
Are not rich.
Okay.
I was gonna end this with what I think that
hold
you
on,
should...
this is our forum, so why don't you let him go?
No,
ahead.
I just I would like to get off the stage here. So what I would say is that what you should do is maybe talk to some of the owners of these companies, talk to the Digital Neighborhood Alliance, and really try to understand where they're coming from and what benefits they have in wanting to build this tech park. Because there are a couple of people here right now that are part of the Digital Neighborhood Alliance that have started and worked with the plans to build this tech park for 5-6 years now. And I think that an open dialogue between you and those people would help foster some communication, some knowledge, both with your desires as well as the tech park's desire. And I think that just in general, you both could benefit from sitting down and talking.
Well, we appreciate the rest of your compromise. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, Brent, Adam.
Yeah.
I just wonder, do you have a sense now of who on city council is sort of with the tech park versus who is maybe on the fence about it? And
I don't know. I have a general idea.
Who on city council is? Oh, we have a city council.
Whatever you want.
What are the factions on the council?
Yeah, yeah. Where are people at?
Who's going against the tech park on the council? Holy cats, that's a whole discussion. My name is Steve Bull, and I'm the 6th district representative of the city council. You're in my district now. I'm also the parliamentarian. There's a lot of things to what you said. I don't even know where to start. I don't quite understand whether the goal of the Solidarity Network is housing, regardless of jobs, job regardless of housing, or both. I think that those are two related but fundamentally different questions. And I'm not sure what the tech part has to do with housing. So I have a lot of knowledge of these topics. I can't listen. If you could ask me more specific questions, I might be able to answer them, but I don't want to take the floor. So if you have a specific, more specific question, I'm happy to answer what I know.
Who on city council supports the tech park?
Most everyone.
Okay. Is there anyone who doesn't or has explicitly said I don't or I'm...
I mean, no one's ever put it in the frame that the Solidarity Network has put today. I don't think anybody on the council sees it as this kind of a problem. I think that the idea of a TIF district is that it's the I is increment. In other words, let's say that $1 million or let's just say $1 a year goes to the state based on what's there now. Any additional thing built there will generate more taxes, but those additional taxes above that first dollar won't go to the state. They'll stay in a fund that will benefit the locality. Now, there was a really good article in The Atlantic that points out that in Indiana and most other states, municipalities export tax dollars to the rural parts of the state. And we see TIF districts as a benefit only because that's money we would lose to Indianapolis that would then be distributed to the rest of the state. And here's money we can keep here. Now, these dollars are capital dollars. They can't be spent on operational expenses. They can be spent to build infrastructure. So if we think that the TIF dollars should be used for housing, well, okay, we can do that. Pretty much just last year, we consolidated almost all the TIF districts in the city into one TIF district so that the money could be used more flexibly anywhere in the area we thought it needed to be. Tech Park may be the only exception to this. There's another specific TIF district for the Tech Park. But, you know, there, so much to say, John.
Okay. So
I'll just stop there.
Okay.
I'll answer another question.
Like, appreciate people coming sharing their views. I do want to say a couple things about that, though. One, like, you said there's only been one narrative around this whole thing, essentially the whole time, right? We're trying to present the counter-narrative, okay? And as far as TIF districts or generating startups or whatever it may be, folks, we have plenty of examples to look at. Like I said, San Francisco, Silicon Valley are perfect examples, right? These are bigger economic trends than the magnanimity of a startup company, right? I could make a startup company and I could sacrifice part of my profit to keep the company going, okay? But the goal of every company is to grow, and we want to cut across this narrative that growth of corporations, increase in profits, is good for everybody. Because it's not. It's the opposite. Okay? We don't subscribe to neoliberal trickle-down economics that says the more money in the people at the top's pockets means more money for everybody. We know that's not the case. It's all over the country. So we can say whatever we want about what nurturing startups or tech industry or nascent tech industry we're doing in Bloomington. It's already happening everywhere else. And there's no reason on earth to think it will be different here.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm going to try to get a support that part to work on it for a little bit. One thing that I would say that I think is terrible that is happening in San Francisco and lots of areas is displacement is a major problem. And a lot of it being racially driven, and I do think and agree with you that that's gross. I do feel like this is a bit different in that this is a community trying to move into empty land and very intentionally not trying to displace anyone. And I think we need to figure out how to mitigate any effects. But I also think it's good to use that land, and particularly for, you know, Anthony mentioned he doesn't work with us, but closely with Cheddar, you know, we have 4 employees. You know, we're trying to build a community of small startups that can be close to each other, sort of a co-op of startups working together. I think it's a good use for that land, but I do think we need to figure out how to mitigate any, you know, problems that that can cause. I would not want to displace anyone. I'm hoping we're not doing that. That has never been our intention.
All this is beyond intention, unfortunately, though. The displacement is already happening. It's already happening. The tech park is not going to reverse it. Yes, there's nothing on that land currently. A land could be anything. That's one of the reasons we're here to talk about it, right? It doesn't have to go to corporations.
I would like to maybe ask if there is something that you've thought of that should go in that area instead, because I think one of the largest things that is a big concern of not utilizing the land is that it's eventually going to be bought out by a developer that has the money to buy it from the city and build more student housing. Like, that is definitely going to happen if it doesn't get developed. Like
that comes, we'll fight that too. Yes.
This brings up a great point. We really are, one thing we're starving for is alternatives from the community, where we want to hear what people have to say. We want to know what people want to see in their community. Do you want to see a bunch of, I mean, no offense to the people that are working in, I don't want you to feel bad. I mean, everybody has to have a job right now. But what do you want to see in your downtown? I mean, do you want to see a Google Tech Park? I don't.
Well, I don't want to see Google Tech Park, but I want to see, like,
Google Tech Park bus.
I mean, to me, it's, and that's been one of the things that I've been fighting for so hard in the Tech Park, that it would not be an office complex, right? What I want to see is a vibrant sort of neighborhood, and that's why the DNA is called the DNA, right? It's like, my desire is to see, mixed use is the big thing to me. That's the buzzword, right? But the vibe is like a cool place you want to hang out. That's what I want. That you can live in. You can go to the bar downstairs. You know, like, and everybody.
People
has
are homeless.
For who? Who's gonna go to these bars?
Right. Everyone has different opinions about what that means, right?
About what it
people are literally out in the cold, freezing right now. Like, that is what we're trying to focus on. Not you building this like vibrant, imaginary vibrant utopia for like people who have security to hang out in. Like, there are people who have different resources and who live very different lives in the city, and we're looking out for the people who are struggling.
Yeah, but you've made the tech part.
So, hold on a second now. Let's.
There's people with hands up.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I think develop like a lot larger homeless shelter for the homeless community.
Yeah.
Myself, I'm getting ready to get a picture for my apartment. I've got PTSD, Professional Law, Social Security, and Disability. Mm-hmm. And I went through a hard year last year, and I'm getting ready to get evicted. And so I might need it myself. So.
Exactly.
But I mean, the Crawford House was a great idea, but paying $5 million for a little tiny little building that doesn't house all of them is not right. The rest of them, they put them over in Walnut Grove.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. Instead of paying all that, they should have built a lot bigger facility. For that price, it was paying for probably a lot more expensive material, which they could have got a lot cheaper material, built a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. The bigger the facility, the less homelessness that you have on the street. Unless they choose to stay there, like some do.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. The Solidarity Network, you know, the way we say we have a way that we struggle over these kinds of things. We don't want to ask companies, we don't want to ask the city to do things for us, because we don't believe that's how real struggles are won. Real struggles are won by the people, organized together. Okay? That's why this trend has been going on for so long, right? Because everybody waits, asks, negotiates with people who have everything to gain from these things. And if you're trying to get somebody who has something to gain, right, to not do that for your benefit, you got an uphill battle. We believe people need to be organized together. It's the only way that we've ever won struggles with landlords, right? I don't know how many of you have been in court over a dispute with your landlord before. And however many, however many people have, there's probably very few who actually end up winning. It's because the system is not set up to work for people who are struggling. It's not set up to work for the poor. When cities and corporations do things in the interest of people with wealth and power. So we believe we have to organize together. We have to organize people who will directly be affected in a negative way, instead of asking people who will benefit to do it for us. Do you have something?
Yeah, so I would say that, I guess all I'll say is this, is that I'm not coming into this in a way that would be viewed as unbiased, but I empathize mightily with all the socialist things that you're saying. And I don't mean that in a derisive way. Like, I mean that like for real. I would say that when you're up against forces that are already moving a lot faster than you can keep up, that have resources that you don't have, that have access to power that you're never going to get, you either need to be subversive, you need to be thoughtful, or you need to be organized. And I would encourage everything that's happening. I think it's fantastic that you're out and you're making your points be heard, because again, if people don't do it, things just happen and things just, progress just goes on and on and on and on and on. But if you're going to fight forces in a town that's not very big, the cities you mentioned, I've looked at a lot of those places, Boulder, Austin, places like that. The challenge is that those places have much more scale. And you don't have that kind of scale here. So you also don't have the money here. And so, without some kind of agenda or some kind of organization and some kind of, like, you need to be tight. Like, you need to be thoughtful and tight about what it is you want to have happen, because the forces you're trying to be up against are already moving a lot faster than you can keep up with. And so, like, if I can implore you to do anything and to say anything, it's figuring out what it is proactively you want to be done, figuring out in small, pragmatic ways and in more broader ways how you can make those things happen, and then get to work and be insidious. Showing up, being visible. Yes, it sucks. Yes, it's frustrating. No, folks don't listen. Yeah, they're going to do whatever the hell they want to do anyway. But at the end of the day,
you're not going to, a lot of the forces you're talking about are things that are much bigger than Bloomington. They're much bigger than the state. In the era of Trump, what do you think, like you've got to be local and got to be granular and you've got to be thoughtful about the ways that we've got to move forward. Because, so, but the things you're talking about doing, talking about companies and working with people and things like that, there are things that we can do. There are ways that we can siphon capital and work with, why are you working with companies? Forget it. Working with government to say, look, you work for us. We want you to do these kinds of things. But being pragmatic and practical about the ways that you can make that happen. You want a million, they give you 10,000. A hell of a lot more you were going to get before. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying that there are ways to hold people accountable and throughout history, ways to hold people accountable. But whenever they've done that, they haven't done it in a way that's been, in a way that's not organized. You look at the civil rights movement, you look at all the different workers' groups that have been all over the country, even now, it's always organized. And so we just have to be more organized. That's all I got.
Completely agree with that. Yeah, I mean, that's why we're here. That's why we're, that's why we organized in the first place. You know, and we're trying to grow. And yes, we're up against powerful forces. So let's hear some. Let's hear for some people. You know, are the people here who aren't in tech companies who would like to speak, because it's sort of been dominated by that at this point. Are there people who have concerns that we haven't addressed yet, or questions or thoughts? Yes.
Yeah, I think that rather than be specific, one of the things that a group like this can do is ask these kind of general questions. Like, we just had an election where the working class in states like Indiana voted overwhelmingly for a fucking fascist. Mm-hmm. Because they don't believe that the government ever does anything for them. So the general question should be, with this piece of land that is owned by the city, what the hell is being done for Indiana's working class with this land and with this type of development? Because every time you have a new bar that you can go to and hang out at, you have a waiter or a waitress who's making $2.13 an hour plus tips, who can't afford to live downtown, who has to find housing on the edge of town where we have an inadequate public transportation system.
And
so
a second
being done to those people with this type of development? We don't need to be specific. We need to start asking that question and ask it loudly and forcefully.
Yeah, oh, I just had a question. I mean, so what is the BSN's next move? Do you have is there something you need from us, something you use help with?
Well, we need people to work with us on formulating how we're going to move forward. Okay, I mean, we have examples of movements which have stopped big projects like this, right? Just through the mobilization, grassroots mobilization of people. They tried to build a shiny new prison up in Gary that people mobilized and stopped from building, right? These types of things happened, all right? We see people fighting in North Dakota right now to stop billion dollar project to move oil, right? And we saw which side the government was on in those cases, right? We saw the rubber bullets and the pepper spray and the water cannons.
Blown off arms.
So, you know, what we need is to talk about our concrete steps going forward. And, you know, what I could say here, I think, most directly is that, you know, it is the investors, really, who determine this one way or another, right? Like, we talked about the Duke Energy project. Are people familiar with this? The Duke Energy substation going in right adjacent to the tech park, right? There was a community group that, you know, tried to get together and went the route of city council to try to stop it, right? Well, what came up at the city council meeting was that city council literally had no power to stop it. The only question is, would they vacate right-of-ways to Duke Energy?
Or build a wall to block the sound?
The rep of Duke Energy basically spoke to the city council as a representative of a billion-dollar corporation, effectively saying, we're going to do what we want to do. So it's those entities that we have to target, and what they don't like more than anything else is a population
that's antagonistic to their interests and demonstrates it. We have to be visible as an organized force. That's the number one thing. Where to appear, where to enunciate our demands together en masse. One of the things we do as the Solidarity Network is we deliver our demands with a group of 25 to 30 people directly to a landlord, right? And just the mere appearance of that number of people standing together is enough to sort of change the way the landlord thinks about these things. So if you want to fight with us, we will. We'll get you signed up. We'll let you know when we're meeting. And we can hopefully form a path forward together. So thanks, everybody, for coming.
Listen to the Bloomington Solidarity Network and the community discuss Bloomington's planned technology park. The talk took place on January 7th at the Monroe County Public Library. The Solidarity Network discussed their stance, while members of the community asked questions and voiced opinions. The main speaker at the event is organizer Adam Scout.
Listening to Standing Room Only. Join us each week for on-location recordings of lectures, town hall meetings, and other public forums. If there's a particular event you'd like to hear broadcast on this program, email that information to us directly at news@wfhb.org. The Standing Room Only archive is available online at wfhb.org/news. Standing Room Only is a production of our volunteer-powered news and public affairs department here on Community Radio, WFHB.